Now in session. Good afternoon. Senate Labor and Commerce, Thursday, April 3rd, 2014. We have with us today Senator Olson, Senator Machicki, and myself, Senator Dunleavy. We do have a quorum. Please turn off any communication devices that may make noise. The plan today is to hear three House bills. This will be the introduction of these bills. We will hear them and provide time for the public to comment. So the three bills today would be HB 32, Lines of Business on Business License, HB 276, Motor Vehicle Dealer Employees, HB 234, Extend Regulatory Commission of Alaska. So the first bill is going to be HB 32, sponsored by Representative Costello. This is the first hearing on the bill. If the representative and or staff could come forward, please state your name for the record and present the bill.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mia Costello. I represent District 20 in Anchorage. And before us this morning is a bill that came to me as a request from a constituent, and we have found wide-ranging support for it. Essentially, what it does is it changes statute, current statute, which right now requires you to have a separate business license for every line of business. And we see this as an unnecessary redundancy, and so this bill will make that change. And it also allows for a period of time for the person applying for the license to make a change on their application. And with me this afternoon is Charles Ginchard. He's my legislative aide, and if the chair would like, he is able to go through the bill.
For the record, my name is Charles Ginchard, staff to Representative Costello. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll just do a brief sectional analysis of the bill. Beginning on page 1, line 4, section 1, this is amended in a very small way, occurring on line 12. What this does, because now that a business license will have many lines of businesses with it, this is amended that the primary and secondary line of business will be on the actual license that gets printed out. However, I will point out that online you will be able to see any number of business licenses that a person may have on that same license. Moving on to section 2, occurring on page 2, this is a new subsection. It's paragraph F there on line 2, just stating that the department they'll have to make a new application that allows for multiple lines of business on one business license. Section 3, we're on line 5 now on page 2. This is the language regarding a change to the business license. This is a change that may be made without an additional fee. There are two different kinds of changes that may be made. The first is a change that can be made anytime through the tenure of the license if it was a change to correct an error that was made by the department. Number two there on line 10, this is a change where if the business owner or the license holder, if they decide to make a change, they can do so within the first 30 days at no charge. Subsection F on line 12, that simply clarifies that if you do make a change or update your license, it'll have the same expiration date. Moving on to section 4, occurring on line 14. A new definition is added to this statute. This was to simplify the method that the bill was drafted in. It was more simple to define line of business and then sort of insert necessary language there. You'll see that line of business is defined as a trade, service, profession, or activity. That language was taken from the existing definition of business in this statute. So this definition of line of business works together with the definition of business, where the definition of business is plural and line of business is then singular, referring to the same language. Mr. Chairman, Section 5, then I believe refers to the effective date and transition language. So, with that, if there are any additional questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Members of the committee, are there questions at this point?
No question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you. Through the chair, so what is the cost to the state? How often do you renew a business license? I've got a couple, but I can't remember that sort of thing.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, the cost of the license is $50 annually. However, it is handled on a biannual basis, so it's $100 every 2 years. The cost to the department is in the one fiscal note we have. It's fiscal note number 2. You'll see the cost occurs in two different ways. First, we've got $8,500. That's a one-time cost to update the database, because now you will have a business license that has to, the database needs to then be able to keep track of multiple pieces of data on that same license, all the different lines of business. So that's a fixed cost to the department to bring the database up to speed to be able to handle that. However, you will notice a change in revenue to the department, an estimated loss of $37,500. That is, if you look at all of the businesses in this state or all the business licenses in this state that have the same name and multiple licenses, if 100% of those were to consolidate, the department would see that loss in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's money that would stay in the hands of those license holders.
Is there any other impact on the fiscal note?
Not to my knowledge, Mr. Chairman.
There's not an increase to implement the bill?
I do not believe so, but there are representatives from the department here that could better answer that question.
Question? Thank you, folks. Can we have Sarah Chambers from the Department of Commerce come forward, please? State your name for the record, and we may be able to ask you a few questions. Sarah, you seem to be a regular here lately. Sarah's not alone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Director of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing. With me today, I have Kathy Fagerstrom, who's the Program Coordinator over Corporations and Business Licensing, sort of a lifeline in case we need any additional technical questions answered.
Thank you. What is your, from your perspective, what's the impact, what's the fiscal note for this bill?
The fiscal note is, as the sponsor staff stated, that we estimate 8.5 to update the database. The 750 licenses, Mr. Chairman, are a good faith effort to search the existing business licensing database for an estimate or a likely number that could be impacted. So this is indeed revenue that we would estimate to be lost. However, there is no impact to the outcome of the cost of a business license. That would remain at $50 a year.
Thank you. Questions? Okay. Seeing no questions. We're going to open public testimony this time. Is there anyone online? Anyone else in the audience? I see a hand. Would you come forward, please? State your name for the record. Tell us who you're associated with. And
thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Peggy M. McConaughey, and I am a proud member of the National Federation of Independent Business and have been for a very long time. I am grateful to Representative Costello for her bringing this to your attention and trying to get it changed. I am one of those people who will be affected. I have a real estate license and have had one since 1982. In 1996, I started teaching real estate throughout the state, and consequently am required as of this moment at getting a second business license. For small businesses like myself and other small businesses around the state, this is a doubling of the fees that I have to pay in a year in regards to business licensing, and it is a hardship. I hope that you see clear that this is something that will be reasonable for the businesses and small businesses throughout Alaska, and you'll push this bill through.
Questions from members of the committee? Thank you. Seeing none. Anyone else in the audience that wants to testify at this point? Anyone online? Seeing none, we're going to leave public testimony open. Any further questions or comments from members of the committee before we move on? Seeing none, we're going to set the bill aside. It'll be heard at a future date. And for right now, we're going to take a brief at ease to transition to the next bill.
Back
open session. We now turn to HB 276. It's a bill sponsored by Representative Thompson. This is the first hearing on the bill. We have Representative Thompson, Jane Pearson, his staff, will be presenting. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Steve Thompson, representative from House District 3 up in Fairbanks. Thank you for hearing the bill today. House Bill 276 clarifies that auto salespersons, finance personnel, and service writers are exempt from the Alaska's Minimum Wage and Hour Act. These individuals are paid on a commission basis and have not, have never been hourly employees. House Bill 276 was drafted in response to confusion caused by a previous regulation, 8 AAC 15.910 A16, from the Department of Labor that defines straight commission as a fixed percentage of each dollar of sales that an employee makes. This became interpreted to mean that the commission must be applied to the gross amount of the sale. While this interpretation might be appropriate for some commission sales, such as real estate, it is not, and it's not customary for auto sales. An auto dealer must pay for the vehicle out of the sale price of the vehicle. And advertising laws prevent an add-on charge that would cover advertising, cover add-on for a commission. So if the net sale of a vehicle is only 3%, there's no way they can pay a 5% commission. House Bill 276 clarifies the long-standing employment practice of the industry by maintaining a commission-based employment system that works well for both employees and employers. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development has been extremely helpful and did amend its regulations. However, as a result of litigation, we believe that it's necessary to seek final clarification in statutes. And that's kind of a shape of what the bill amounts to. My staff, Chief of Staff Jane Pearson, can do a walkthrough on the sections of the bill for you.
Please do so.
For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. And Section 1 of the bill amends AS 2310-055A. And that basically exempts auto service writers on page 4, lines 2 and 3. It exempts the financing people on page 4, lines 4, 5, and 6. And the salespeople on line 7, page 4, from the Minimum Wage Act, since they are commissioned employees. Furthermore, this bill adds definitions to lease, motor vehicle, and motor vehicle dealer.
And there's no fiscal there's no fiscal impact, correct?
Chairman Dunleavy, there is no fiscal impact on this bill.
Questions from members of the committee? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Thompson, I see letters here from the Automobile Dealers Association. One of the questions I have, there's a pretty large Ford dealer up there in Fairbanks, and since that's your hometown, I was wondering if he had a position on this bill.
I don't think we had a direct communication from Seekins Ford Lincoln Mercury, but we do have in the room, though, Steve Allwine, who is an auto dealer here in Juneau, and he's a member of the board of the Auto Dealers Association.
And for sure, if I could continue, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Former Senator Seekins had didn't oppose this legislation.
No, he has not.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions for folks in front of us right now? Seeing none, thank you. We'll ask Mr. Allwine to come forward. And Mr. Allwine, please state your name for the record, who you're associated with, and if you have any testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Steve Allwine. I'm a board member of the Alaska Auto Dealers Association. I've been in the industry for about 41 years, and I'm pleased to say 26 of them as an auto dealer here in Juneau. And I'm just simply making myself available for any questions. If I could respond to the senator's inquiry through the chair, I also know the former senator personally, and I can assure you he has no problems with this bill.
Questions for Mr. Allwine?
Does anybody have problems with this bill?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Seeing none, we're going to open public testimony. Do we have anyone online? Anyone else in the audience? Okay, we're going to leave public testimony open, set the bill aside for a future meeting, and we're going to take a brief at ease. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We now turn to HB 141, sponsored by Representative Hawker. This is the first hearing on the bill. Presenting the bill will be Representative Hawker, and he does have staff with him. Representative Hawker, please state your name for the record and present the bill.
Thank you, Senators. My name is Representative Mike Hawker. I represent District 27, South Anchorage, Upper Hillside. Senator Dunleavy, I'm here to present House Bill number 234, which is an act extending the termination date of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and providing for an effective date. The bill extends the termination date of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska from the coming June 30th, 2014 to June 30th, 2022. The legislation, of course, is part of our recurring process of sunsetting, examining, auditing, and reviewing, and then reauthorizing state agencies and commissions. There was a legislative budget and audit done that recommended the reauthorization for 8 years, again, consistent with the auditor's recommendations that, or findings that the agency merited continued existence, has been operating in an efficient and effective manner. Mr. Chair, I'd point out that in the appendixes to the audit, the ratings by the users, by the stakeholders, people who are in fact involved in hearings before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, that notwithstanding any disagreements among those users with the commission, there is overwhelming support for how well the agency is functioning. I'd point out that on page 31 of the audit, the regulatory cost charges by which the agency operates are sufficient. And probably more than anything today, what this agency needs to move forward in the most effective manner to accomplish its goals and our missions of having a quality, quasi-judicial, independent quasi-judicial board to handle those sections of law with which we've charged it at this point in time, that is stability. Long-term future stability, they've certainly earned that from us through any number of audits over the recent years, and that's why we're coming forward with the recommendation for an 8-year extension, sir.
Is there any change in the fiscal note, Representative?
Sir, no. The fiscal note is, as it is presented here in the House, the first fiscal note, this is a primarily through regulatory cost charges, RCA receipts of approximately $9 million a year. The other charges are IA and CIP receipts, essentially fees for services.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Hawker on this bill? Seeing none, thank you. Could we have Chris Curtis come up with legislative audit? Please state your name for the record and who you're associated with and begin your testimony.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I represent the Division of Legislative Audit. Our agency did conduct an audit of RCA. It's dated July of 2013. Purpose of the audit was to examine whether the commission was serving the public's interest and whether its termination date should be extended. Overall, the audit concluded that RCA is operating in the public's interest, and we recommended extending the termination date 8 years till June 2022. The audit does include two recommendations. Neither of these recommendations impacted our recommendation for extension. The audit, we had two recommendations. Page 11 of your audit report has those recommendations. The audit found the commission had only partially addressed a prior audit recommendation to improve the case management system. When we went in and looked in 2013, we again found high error rates, so we again recommended improvements. The audit does include one new recommendation. That is to recommend the legislature consider clarifying the statutory timeline for rulemaking proceedings. We do provide a little bit of information about RCA's process for rulemaking proceedings on page 7 of the audit report. For those who aren't familiar with RCA, they record their activities in what we call dockets. These dockets are categorized into four different types: utility, pipeline, complaint, and regulatory. This recommendation addresses the regulatory, or also referred to as rulemaking, dockets. Page 7 describes that the statutes require RCA to issue a final order in a rulemaking docket no later than 730 days after a petition for change is filed or after the commission initiates initiating order for such proceedings. There is a provision for a 90-day extension for good cause. Statutes prohibit RCA from terminating a proceeding in one docket and opening a proceeding in another docket on substantially the same manner. On the bottom of page 7, you'll see a description on RCA's current practice. Essentially, we found that RCA on occasion has split rulemaking proceedings into two dockets, one to consider whether there is a need for regulation, and another in an area of concern or interest. And then once public testimony and comments are obtained regarding a potential need for regulation, the docket is closed. If the record indicates a need for regulation, RCA may open another docket to consider adopting the regulations. We found that this process does allow RCA to take up to 4.5 years to complete proceedings. RCA management describes in the audit that they believe that including clear intent language in a docket's initiating order makes the process transparent and does comply with statute. We did find that RCA was including clear intent language in the docket, and in that regard it was transparent. However, we wanted to raise this issue for legislative consideration because it does appear to evade the statutory timelines and does not appear to serve the regulated community or the public's interest. The recommendation is for the legislature to consider clarifying statute to ensure RCA complies with legislative intent when processing regulatory dockets.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Curtis from members of the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Patch, please come forward. State your name for the record. Who you're associated with, and if you have testimony, please proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is T.W. Patch. I have the privilege of serving the Regulatory Commission of Alaska as its elected chairman. My term as chairman will expire later this year. On behalf of the staff and the commissioners, I thank the committee for having this hearing today. As Representative Hawker so eloquently stated, our life as a commission will end on June 30th of this year if we are not extended. It is the position of the Commission that we have earned your trust, we have met our obligations, and we are certainly hopeful that you will see, in concert with Mr. Hawker's presentation and that of Ms. Curtis, that the agency should be extended for a complete term of 8 years, which we acknowledge is the statutory maximum. The Commission's legislative life was most recently considered in House Bill 24, and as a result of that, we were given a 3-year extension. You provided some guidance to us as to what you wanted us to do. We met that guidance. We filed a report with the legislature on January 16th of 2012, and promised a further report. In the report we filed, we laid out to you what we would do to address concerns regarding the length of time it took for the Commission to decide cases involving rate changes and certain other matters. We filed a second report with you at the commencement of this legislative session on January 21st of 2014. In that report, we documented for you that we had significantly reduced the period of time for rate cases from 450 days, 15 months, to just at 300 days, 10 months. We did that without ever asking for any additional funding, any additional staffing, any additional legislative enabling pronouncements. And while it has stressed the agency and it has stressed the Regulatory Affairs and Public Advocacy section of the Department of Law, we are at the moment holding that timeline, and we'll do our best to hold that timeline. The stresses may mount. We are being asked to undertake a number of new and different and quite complex matters. We've worked with AGDC. We've worked with AOGCC. We addressed the governor's interior gas project. There are pending matters related to transmission, which may come before the agency in the near future. But at the moment, we are doing what you have asked, and I believe we are doing it well. Turning to the comments of Ms. Curtis, she is correct. There are two matters before you. The RCA certainly concurs and has already undertaken steps to address her finding in recommendation number one, that the chair of the RCA should improve and enforce written procedures. Manuals have been updated, new manuals are being written, and I'm certain that there will be no recurrence with respect to that. I shouldn't say that, recognizing that an audit can almost always find problems, but there will be measurable enhancement. With respect to recommendation number two.
Excuse me? Senator Machicki has a question.
Senator Machicki.
Of course, I could say Mr. Chairman and be addressing both of you at the same time. It's Mr. Patch, in this case, was there any serious data issues associated with your business, or were they just simple errors that were identified during the audit?
I've never had an absolute through the chair, Senator Machicki. I've never had an absolute quantification of the issues. I choose to believe that Ms. Curtis and her staff deemed them serious enough to raise them for your consideration, and I believe that she intended to be helpful in pointing them out to the agency so that its management practices and process could be enhanced. I simply take that in an optimistic vein, and that is why we are approaching it with the recrafting of manuals and the training of our staff on new manuals, practices, and procedures. I do not believe we would have been faulted for simple transposition of phone numbers in our database.
Senator Machicki, we could bring Ms. Curtis back up and be able to add detail to that question if you so choose.
Okay.
Ms. Curtis? Would you please come back up? Sir, you can stay there.
Yeah, because my follow-up may.
Yeah. Once again, for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I represent the Division of Legislative Audit, and I am fervently looking at the support.
Want to take a minute?
Every finding recommendation will include the actual finding, and we're required by standards to give that finding perspective so users understand. On page 11 is the finding. It has the prior finding. This finding has reoccurred in the prior two audits of the annual report and the prior sunset audit. So this is the fourth time it's been before you. On page 11, we examined 26 of 261 tariff filings and 41 of 175 utility dockets, and we found error rates of 27% and 20% of the respective sample. And when we talk about error rates, we're talking about various information that is included in the annual report, open dates, closed dates, various things. So that's what we're testing when we're looking at these dockets, and that's the nature of the errors.
Senator Machicki.
So little experience with tariffs and potential value of tariffs, or were any of them associated with the calculation of tariff that could end up being a pretty substantive issue?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, I believe these had to do with dates. I believe that if we found that it was material, we would have pursued it and maybe possibly had another recommendation to address a specific issue of that was material. The nature of our errors we found were related to descriptive information in an annual report as opposed to anything that would have affected a decision.
Ms. Curtis, from your perspective, whose role is it to, for lack of a better phrase, do the corrective action on this? The commission's, and then who follows up?
Through the chair, the recommendation is always written to the position we believe can make the change or could be responsible for the change. In this case, it's directed to the RCA chair. I doubt that person would directly do the work, but is responsible for ensuring it occurs.
Follow up, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Machicki.
So what you're saying is that your findings were of tariff filing and docket data entry issues were largely clerical.
Senator Michiki, through the chair, I'm thinking of those in the same term. They could be input errors, most likely data input errors. Those can be associated with a lack of procedures in entering the data, so people might be pulling information from different areas on different types of documents. Typically, they're associated with some type of order or piece of paper application or that you can actually get a date from, like an open date or a closed date or an action date. I would think clerical, administrative, same. I'm thinking about those in the same terms. But things that can be addressed by adequate training, adequate procedures, and a quality control procedure at the commission for continuous review to ensure that the information's being done accurately.
This is not being unduly concerned, but as we move into the future and Alaska takes on some big projects, we're just asking some questions just to make sure the comfort level.
Thank you, Chairman Donnelly. I wish to be fully respectful of Ms. Curtis. She's been very helpful. However, if a document comes in and it has a letter and the letter has a date, April 1st, it may not be date stamped until April 3rd. So as the chairman, I need to decide what date I'm going to receive and enter the document in our data system. There could well be an error, and we should address by practice, policy, by manual, and training that discrepancy. And we are in the process of doing that. The impact, as Senator Michiki has observed, on a tariff filing, which if it is not dealt with within 45 days, is that it is given force of law on the 45th day. So that 2 or 3 day error has a legal consequence in favor of the utility applicant. So I am serious about getting this concern of Ms. Curtis corrected. And she is right. It has taken some time to grasp and move forward. This is not the first time this audit finding has been made. It has, to a certain degree, been dealt with by the adoption of electronic filing measures. You know when your computer receives a document. And I would hope that clerical errors can be reduced thanks to the computer imprint of when the document is received.
Thank you. Questions from the members of the committee? Mr. Patch.
I'm sorry, sir. I don't wish to be rude, and I'm certainly available for commission. But Ms. Curtis raised another point. And rather than belabor the point, I would simply invite the committee members to be aware of the point she raised with respect to the second finding. And I would invite you to look at page 3 of my response to her audit. That is page 37 of the audit packet. And the third full paragraph addresses that concern. Rather than belabor the point, I simply invite the matter. I will tell you that there is another matter which may run up against this same issue. Suppose, for example, the federal government issues a pronouncement that says, we want you to deal with an FCC issue. Lifeline support for low-income Alaskan residents. And we open a docket, and we deal with it. And we wait for the federal government, the FCC, to change its practices, its policies, its procedures, or pronounce what they want done. By virtue of supremacy of law doctrines, they control the field. We do not. And if they take longer than our Section 175 timeline, what are we to do? I submit to you that you've instructed us to close the docket. And then if we run into the situation that Ms. Curtis has been so kind as to present to you as a legitimate concern of hers, the federal government then 6 to 10 months or 4 years later, pronounces, we would be opening a docket on substantially the same lifeline question, how to deal with it. And I do not wish to be faulted for disobeying the federal government, nor do I wish to be faulted for ignoring your Section 175. So our belief, and it's concurred in by other agencies, by other state commissions, and by the Department of Law of this state, is that the opening of a docket to consider the need for a regulation is an entirely different matter than the opening of a docket to consider a specific regulation and how it may address a problem. I wish to be clear. Ms. Curtis is helping me be a better manager of my agency, and she's helping you by providing guidance and concern to you. In this case, I do not think her recommendation need concern this legislature with respect to my agency's sunset extension.
Questions for members of the committee? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Patch, how long have you been the chairman of the RCA?
I will conclude 3 one-year terms as chairman on June 30th of this year, sir.
And were you on the RCA before?
I was appointed by Governor Parnell in 2010 and confirmed by the legislature in February of that year, began my service.
I couldn't, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
You state that one of your, I wouldn't say you didn't use these words, but one of your main claims to fame, which as a business person myself, where time means money, you've significantly had a reduction in time that these reports or findings had to be done, and I commend you for that. But what was your secret to go ahead and getting these time reductions in place from 450 days, roughly 15 months, as you pointed out, to 300 days, 10 months? What regimes did you use to implement?
Diligence, Senator Olson, through the chair. Diligence, clear expression of desire for cooperative process, early meeting between my administrative law judges and the parties to set procedural schedules that would arrive at a decision that would process the need for discovery, careful employment of the regulatory affairs assets so that in those more complex dockets where they needed to be there to represent the public interest, they were not so inordinately overstressed that they were hampered in their ability to discharge their mission. Honest, open conversation with parties in the dockets, where if they really, truly felt that they needed additional time, they could avail themselves of statutory process to request additional time. And the accounting for that time on a utility company requesting time to make a better presentation of its case is not chargeable against the agency's time for processing.
May I continue, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Was anything compromised when you're dealing with such a significant time reduction in hearing these cases?
Senator Olson, through the chair, if anything was compromised, I'm certain you would have heard about it. I believe that nothing was compromised. The utility companies who agreed to and participated in those cases which were decided in significantly less time than the statutory timeline mandates did not file lawsuits, may or may not have filed requests for reconsideration with the agency, but they accepted our decisions, were happy to have a decision, and went about their way providing safe, convenient, reasonably priced service to their customers.
One last question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
It has to do as we look into the future and we start seeing the SB 138, essentially the LNG pipeline project, proceeding on, do you anticipate in any way regulating that commodity?
I have an expert in the room, Senator Olson, through the chair. I have an expert in the room, in fact, two experts in the room who could probably assist me in a response. However, I can tell you that at the present time, the agency's engineering and pipeline and technical staff and its legal staff are actively engaged in meetings with Mr. Fauske's AGDC staff, and we are reviewing actual text of documents and protocols as they come towards a filing for a tariff and perhaps an open season. So if your question is, what am I doing to get ahead of the AGDC tariff issues? Yes, I am engaged in that process actively. I can't tell you what the outcome will be. Mm-hmm. There will ultimately be a filing, and we will decide the filing. I believe we'll be able to decide it in timely fashion. And I hope that's responsive to your question, sir.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mashiki.
Mr. Patch, and I always wished I had two of those initials that sounded good together for a first name, but I don't. I think TW's pretty cool. I'd like to talk with you offline on recommendation number two to discuss. I can see a parting of opinions, but I think it's possible to find some middle ground that does help with a little bit of a change in legislation, and I don't see how the issue is going to go away in future audits if we don't solve the discrepancy.
Senator Mashiki, through the chair, in attempting to compress my presentation a bit, I did not report to you, although I have reported in response to other committees that have been considered House Bill 234, that we have a solution I believe is acceptable to Ms. Curtis, although I would invite her to speak for herself. That is not to in any way suggest I reject your approach to meeting offline. I would welcome that opportunity, sir. And I will make myself available to you in any setting at any time. The RCA did, in its process, adopt an additional docket format. We call it an I docket. It is set out in our regulations. The I docket is intended to be an information gathering docket. And in the cases that the legislative auditor referred to, we now have an additional protocol, that is the iDocket, into which we can receive and in which we can store information. And we could then go from an iDocket, which has no statutory timeline, to an rDocket. So we could talk to our utilities and say, do you think there is a need for a regulation that addresses this concern? And they could tell us, they could provide us information, and then we could perhaps come up with a straw man proposal and move forward to an R docket, which is subject to the timeline. I hope that's responsive, sir.
So to clarify, Mr. Patch, what you're saying is one is essentially an application process, and the other is where you actually start the legal 730-day timeline.
Through the chair, Senator Mashiki, yes. The actual consideration towards whether or not specific language should be incorporated in regulation describing or proscribing behavior.
I'm going to suggest that after you have your discussion, that when the bill comes up again, that some statement be made that your concerns have been clarified or dealt with, because they may be concerns of others as well and others listening online. Any additional questions?
If I may ask Ms. Curtis how she feels about that approach, I think it'd be important to have on the record.
Again, this is Chris Curtis representing Division of Legislative Audit. Questions like that get a bit tricky through the chair, in that our opinion, in my opinion, is based on field work and results of of quite extensive work. We definitely do not take or factor into management decisions on what a management might do to address our recommendation, because we may be called on to audit that provision, and we need to show independence in fact and appearance. So I really don't have a comment about the proposed solution, and my comments are going to be limited to a concern you raised about whether this will show up in future audits. This recommendation is to the legislature to consider clarifying the statute to address this issue. If we have a recommendation like that and we come back in a few years and no action is taken by the legislature even after we've testified of this issue, I will be reluctant to pursue it again, in that this is really part of the policymaker's role in whether or not they feel this needs to be done. So depending on the nature of the finding and recommendation, it won't necessarily show up again if no action is taken on behalf of the legislature.
Thank you.
Okay. Any additional questions at this point? Seeing none, do we have anyone online that wishes to testify? Anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify? I will open at this time for public testimony. Apparently we have no one at this stage, so we'll keep it open. This is a bill that will come back in the very near future. It gives us some time to think about it. Any additional questions or comments from members of the committee before we move on? Seeing none. At this point, we're going to set the bill aside, and we will today's Thursday, so we'll meet on Tuesday, and we'll have an agenda out. So at this point, we are adjourned.